You are listening to the PYD Lab, the podcast for implementers and young leaders who want to examine innovative approaches to positive youth development and hear stories of young people leading change in their communities. This podcast is made possible by the support of the American people through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID. The content and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of USAID or the United States government.
Hey, it's Natasha, and you're in the PYD Lab. Today, we're going to be talking about mental health with our guests, Khadijah Kalam and Nicola Shahab. Now, Khadijah is a youth lead ambassador from Cohort 4, who we're excited to have on the show. She works as a social and behavior change communications officer at SERAC Bangladesh. She also works in awareness building and mental health for adolescents and youth. She'll be joined by Nicola, who is a clinical psychologist working with Making Sense International as a senior specialist for mental health and inclusion. Khadijah and Nicola, welcome to the PYD Lab. I'm so excited to have you both on today.
Thank you so much for inviting me in this show and really very happy to be here.
Thank you for having us. I'm so happy to be here with you all.
You both are doing some amazing work in the mental health field, and that's our topic today. We thought that you both were two great guests to come on and help us talk a little bit more about mental health and what it looks like, not only as a young leader, but a professional. Nicola, how did you get into mental health work?
So I started my journey wanting to do medicine. So I wanted effectively to do psychology and psychotherapy. But I changed my mind because of my school psychologist. And I think she was partly one of the reasons why I decided to go the mental health route. And I'm glad I did, if I'm being honest. She was there for me throughout, and I still look up to her today. I still in touch with her.
I think that is so great. Khadijah, what about you?
My background was child development, and from the beginning of my career, I got to work with the adolescents and the young people very closely. Though my field of work was sexual and reproductive health and rights, through my work, I really felt and noticed that how adolescents' mental health is very connected to their reproductive health. So from that feeling and that thoughts, I started working in this sector.
Mental health awareness, I could say for me, it has greatly risen on my radar, and it seems like society as a whole, discussion around it has greatly increased. And so I'm interested in getting both of your perspectives to see what you think has changed. Like, what has raised the consciousness about mental health? And Khadijah, I'll have you kick us off.
When I look back at the global scenario, or like the country scenario of, in my country, the statistics shows a different result. Like, yeah, we are really talking a lot about our mental health and raising awareness. But if we see the picture in a whole, we see that there are, in our country, like 91% mental health treatment gap is being recorded. And mostly the women, the girls, are found to be 4 times more likely to suffer from depression than men. So we are arranging different sessions, workshops, and many things. But say, if I consider myself, am I very much aware about my mental health? So there comes the question. And then we really get to see it, like what I am actually doing. Am I really aware about myself, my health? Or what is it?
Yeah, I agree with what you just said. We can still see a gap in the mental health response. We can still see a gap, not only responding, but accurately preventing mental health issues or problems that we could have prevented. The issue is parity in the mental health, who gets treatment for mental health, as opposed to the trend where we talk about mental health in common regular discussions, that we are leaning towards destigmatizing mental health when we do that. And I think because the continuous and cumulative effort of organizations and advocates and young people and professionals around raising awareness around mental health, but also it's the effect of social media, where some conversations were behind closed doors, but on social media, we democratize access to discussion, to tools that allow us to have discussions that are more on a personal level.
It's interesting because I find for myself that a part of learning more about mental health, it requires me to learn more information, right? And it's interesting because I feel like right now we're living in a time where we're constantly bombarded with information. Everything is about, right, speed and convenience and how can I do this faster and more efficiently. And so we're rapidly consuming ideas and content and information all of the time. And so I would imagine, obviously, that that has an effect on us. Khadija, what are your thoughts?
I actually, during my master's, I did a survey on adolescents' mental health during the COVID-19 or the pandemic situation. And adolescents and the young people are, that time, they were very much addicted to the devices, and they were very much active on social media. So it really affected their connection or their communication in offline or in person. I believe that really technology or like online platforms are very much important, but it really hinders in us in some other ways. So our mental health is very much affected by our social media and the online platforms. So that was my thought in this perspective, actually.
I want to shift a little bit. So Nicola has a blog post that focuses on the trauma-informed approach. But there was something in your blog that you wrote that I thought was brilliant, and I just wanted to get more of your perspective on it. So Nicola writes, individuals have experiences that shape them, their behavior, their emotions, and their thinking. And sometimes they face specific types of challenges that are related to their identities. Could you expound a little bit more on your perspective with this?
What I mean by that is that everyone comes to work or interacts with people with invisible past experiences. Invisible may be invisible mental health issues or past experiences that they do not maybe share with everyone. That's one. Two, depending on our identity traits and intersectional identity traits, so my gender identity, my sexual orientation, my gender expression, depending on my physical abilities or if I'm living with specific disabilities, depending on my cognitive skills, depending on my language skills, depending if I'm an immigrant or not, or my religion, my ethnicity, my race, I face the world in a different way depending on all of these traits, depending on the society and environment I am in. If the society or environment I am in is deeply, profoundly racist or discriminatory against specific groups of people from specific races, from specific ethnic backgrounds, and if I belong to said marginalized groups, I will face a higher risk of this being discriminated against, higher risk of racism. I will face the world or navigate my environment carrying with me the trauma of existing in an environment that is violent towards me.
When we're working with vulnerable populations who tend to be people who are often facing more than one barrier, as you just described, how can our implementers and researchers, how can we better support the mental health needs of the most vulnerable people in our communities?
So there's something called a trauma-informed approach, but some school of thought will tell you that it's not only about trauma, it's also about mental health as a wider topic, which is true. It's about mental health. This approach, acknowledging mental health issues, acknowledging maybe the trauma that people have been through or other mental health problems that people have been through, is an important lens to have with us, to carry with us, or an important perspective or approach to take. One such thing is to challenge our own biases and to recognize our own privileges. Because sometimes we tend to ask questions that might not be very inclusive or acknowledging of intersectionality or diversity. Another thing that we should take into consideration is more time and more space and more training and capacity strengthening for the staff where they are trained on safeguarding principles, trained on basic mental health principles, trained on challenging their own biases. At the same time, diversity trainings are important. All of these things are in our toolbox that we could use, including a trauma-informed approach training, including a psychological first aid training, including also a space to talk about their learning, what they should change. So space for feedback, to be able to be held accountable and to be able to learn in an iterative manner.
I think that's so important what you talked about there, is particularly around like diversity training for staff and such. You don't want diversity to be used as this buzzword, right? Where people are just kind of like focused on demographics. So thank you so much for that.
I just want to say the bias check, that it is an ongoing learning curve and process. So do not feel bad if you find that you have any biases that you weren't aware of. What's important is that if you are these biases, to work on them, that's the key difference. Because we are born as humans, we have around us, we absorb the biases from our environment, whether we wanted this or not. So it's really important to the first step, if we don't know about them, to start exploring. That's where the sensitive work starts, where you can start making a change.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's super important, particularly around the inclusion discussion. I know when change is happening, it can be uncomfortable, particularly if you're the only in the room, if you're the only person of color, the only woman, the only member of the LGBTQ plus community, you feel a little bit isolated. But I always encourage people, if you're the only in the room, then please come back. And when you come back, bring another friend with you. That really helps build inclusive environments, but also really helps you have someone there with you to begin to kind of bring that change about. So thank you, Nicola, so much for sharing that. It's super important. I want to continue talking about mental health through a positive youth development lens. I'm curious to hear from the both of you, because you both represent either side of the spectrum as a youth and then an implementer doing the work. Nicola, we'll start with you. What should implementers think about when inviting youth to the table, considering things like power dynamics and identity?
We should really know if we are conducting interviews, conducting these assessments or situational analysis, not to be only extractive, focusing on their assets, focusing on their skills. So maybe asking them what they want to do, asking them what they had in mind, asking them about feedback about the project, about the ideas you're presenting, asking them how do they see themselves, in what capacity they see themselves working with us, asking them what kind of resources they might need or think of, thinking about resources to help them strengthen the capacities that they have, the capacities that they want to have, instead of just focusing on them as an asset to help the job, thinking of them as whole individuals with wide range of experiences and skills, and taking into consideration their own perspective into what they need for this project. All of these things would require effort, but they are really, really worth it to have.
Now, on the other side of the spectrum, Khadija, what has been your experience as a young person being invited to the leadership table?
In 2021, I was invited at a conference that was Bangladesh National Youth Conference on Family Planning. And so I got the opportunity to share a panel with our Honorable Minister of Ministry of Health and Family Welfare. I really was presenting 36 million of young people of my country that their needs on reproductive health, and was very lucky to be a part of an advocacy process to establish a volunteer model. This year, that model got approved by the government. So it really made me realize that when a youth being involved in the leadership table, so the young minds are being heard, they're being understood, and their opinions are being valued. When we are working for young people, we really need to include them in the process. We need to hear them, what their demands and what their needs are. So what my experience is that it really is very effective to involve the young people in the leadership table. So it really brings an effective outcome of the process.
Thank you for sharing that, and congratulations on that being implemented. I love both of your recommendations, especially together, because you both touched on personal connections, but then also physical things that you could do for yourself or little things that you could add to your life. Okay, so now is the section of the show where we get into PYD recommendations. P stands for published, Y stands for youth, and D stands for disrupt. We ask a guest, which in this case today, it will be Nicola, to bring three recommendations. One is a published reading source you recommend on a youth development related topic. It could be a book, article, report, and why. The second is a resource or project you know of that's authored or led by a young leader that you want others to know about and why. And three, disrupt, a disruptive, innovative idea, project, or resource that does or will tackle a youth-related challenge. Nicola, go ahead and tell us what you have up first for P, published. What's your recommendation?
Yes, so for published, Mental Health for Marginalized and Underrepresented Groups Toolkit. And the toolkit is really important in the sense that it provides different perspectives, comprehensive perspectives on mental health and intersectional needs for mental health and services for Indigenous peoples, persons with disabilities, LGBTQI+, victims of torture, groups that are considered marginalized or underrepresented depending on the context, is specifically designed to help programs, fully focused mental health programs or adjacent programs that have mental health components on the specific and intersectional need that different marginalized groups would have. The toolkit will be focusing on tools that you can use with different marginalized groups. It will be focusing on guidelines or guiding principles if you want to implement that project. So how do you design this project? What to think of? Why design this project? Who to bring it to the fold? How to focus on meaningfully engaging marginalized groups into the design phase, into the implementation phase, to the monitoring phase, and not tokenize them? It focuses on different aspects of the system that they live in. So laws and policies that are existing that might affect marginalized groups, skills for the staff working with marginalized groups, and maybe service provision, like what kind of projects you can implement, with some of the examples in different pullouts from the kit. I would definitely recommend this.
Thank you so much. And that toolkit, again, it will be coming out in early 2024, and it will be available at youthpower.org. So listeners can stay tuned there to know as soon as it's available. And what about youth? What's your recommendation for a resource or project that you know of that's authored or led by a young leader?
So I would definitely want to highlight our youth lead ambassador. Khadija mentioned she's also one of the youth lead ambassadors' previous cohort, and she's doing amazing jobs in her own community. I had the opportunity to attend the youth lead ambassador's graduation ceremony this year. That was really wholeheartedly impressed by all the amazing work they're doing on the ground, the community-led project, the networks they're working in, the spaces they're occupying to their own communities, their innovative ideas and projects that they are motivated to accomplish, the need to really highlight them as a project and as youth that have the skills to be change makers in the present and in the future.
Absolutely. I love the Youth Lead Ambassador program. And last but not least, D for disrupt. What do you have?
So recently I have been reading this paper on designing an issue-based community issue crowdsourcing monitoring program or framework for the SDGs. And in this paper, they talk about the framework will be used or co-designed by local youth-led NGOs and local communities that work together depending on the issues they're facing, depending on the issues they want to talk about. And then because these local community members and these youth-based NGOs are considered experts with a clear understanding of issues in their context, they are the ones who monitor, come up with a framework for monitoring, reporting, crowdsourced reporting of the issues. Like, for example, if you want to work on education for children, to monitor issues for education, we engage local community members, we engage youth-led organizations. These locally led NGOs can initiate and lead local crowdsourcing campaigns. They can work with local community members to report on resources or on sources or issues they find. Yeah, so this is one framework where I really think a youth-led initiative in this framework is really important and worth highlighting in this podcast.
Those are awesome recommendations, and I know people are always looking for new tools, so that will be extremely helpful. You can access Nicola's recommendations over at youthpower.org/PYDLab.
I want to say thank you so much for doing this, and nice to meet you, Khadija, here.
Thanks to both of you, and it was really great to get introduced with you. Thank you.
Thank you both so much. And now it's time for our PYD recommendations. Our first recommendation is the Integrating Mental Health and Psychosocial Support into Youth Programming Toolkit. This toolkit provides strategies and tools for designing, implementing, and evaluating mental health and psychosocial support programs and activities for youth in low and middle income countries and conflict-affected contexts. This toolkit provides strategies and tools for designing, implementing, and evaluating mental health and psychosocial support programs and activities for youth who live in low and middle income countries and conflict-affected contexts. The toolkit is also available in Arabic, French, and Spanish. Our second recommendation is the Mental Health Fact Sheet that was created by USAID's Mental Health and Psychosocial Support Task Force. Now, this fact sheet aims to give youth a better understanding of mental health and how to ensure that youth, their friends, family, and members of their community have a foundational understanding of what mental health is and what it can look like in various populations. Our last recommendation is the Mental Health Starter Kit. It's a great starting point for anyone who wants to learn more about what affects our mental health in our day-to-day lives, how to implement good practices into our organizations, and how to navigate the sometimes trying and uncertain times that have existed since living in a post-pandemic world. You can access these resources at youthpower.org/PYDLab. Until next time, I'm Natasha, and you've been in the PYD Lab.